Hi, this is Rachel McElroy.
Hello, this is Griffin McElroy.
And this is wonderful.
And here's the tea, folks.
Okay. Oh, literal tea.
I thought we could do more prop comedy. We've been getting a lot of reviews lately that have been scathingly negative because of how little prop comedy we
do. And not scathingly positive.
No, scathingly negative, they say, like, the words that we do, the skits that we do, the jokes, the songs we do, we sing them together. They're great. They love those. But there's not enough sort of tangible physical interaction with props for the purpose of jokes.
And so, can you give me an example of a podcast that does have that you feel like we should emulate?
Oh my God, Serial season 3.
A lot of props.
Very funny. There's
a lot of bicycle horns.
All the Malcolm Gladwell ones. That dude is always fucking ripping it up. With a lot of really funny,
a lot of whoopee cushions.
Yeah, he'll say like, "Here's an outlier liar," and then he'll pick up Liar Liar on DVD and point at it, but you don't you won't see it. That's really funny. He'll be like, "Here's the tipping point," and then he'll fall over in his chair, and that's fucking funny to me.
It is, yeah. No, I get it.
And only me.
I get it.
This is wonderful. This is the show where we talk about stuff that's good and that we're into. My small wonder is this cinnamon tea. That is the only reason why you're hearing my sounds at the moment.
We've had some wild temperature changes here in Austin, and Griffin's body
doesn't respond well,
reacting negatively to it.
My body is like one of those old thermometers that you would find at a Gadzooks that had all the little multicolored balls, and it would float inside of the little glass cylinder full of water that would
show you.
They would be at Gadzooks. Would they not have them at Gadzooks? Or Spencer's Gifts would be more likely.
Spencer's, I feel like, really specialized in erotic
they
comedy.
Had plasma ball. They famously had Anyway.
And thermometers?
I'm like that, only instead of little colorful balls floating to the surface.
Yes.
It's plague. It's disease. Yeah. It's miasma. And it's rough stuff. But this isn't a complaining podcast. It's a podcast where we sing songs and do skits. Do you have a small wonder?
Gingerbread,
the concept. I almost did that as a big wonder, so I'm glad I didn't. I'm glad I sat back on it.
I was trying to think if I know what's in gingerbread, and obviously there's ginger.
Yeah.
I imagine there's nutmeg.
Probably.
Some cinnamon.
What's the brown?
Probably some cloves.
What's the brown? Molasses?
Molasses, yeah.
This is a fun. This would be a fun cooking podcast that we could do.
Which what's
is
you'll the brown?
Say, you can say like any food. You'll be like, yeah. So this right here is broccoli casserole. I'll be like, what's the green? And you would say, well, sweetheart, that's the broccoli.
I would like it if it's always brown, and the podcast is called "What's the Brown?" And every week,
that could be good. That could be good. Who goes first this week? It can't be me.
I think it's me.
I think it's you. Let's just do it. I can't go to the website right now.
Okay. Because of your really comfortable talk show pose.
I'm seated in a very comfortable talk show pose. I have tea in one hand, and I'd have to set that down in order to go to the website.
You have your legs crossed at the knees. You look very conversational.
Thanks. I always cross my legs at the knees. I used to get a hard time for it when I was like in like first grade, second grade, when boys were like real shitheads about stuff like that.
Oh, yeah. You're supposed to put your ankle on your knee to look like a real man spreader.
Because of my huge hog. Yeah. Right, guys? Because of my huge first grade dong. Fucking weirdos. What's your first thing?
My first thing is superstitions.
Okay.
I realized this today. It's the knock on wood thing. The knock on wood thing is real important to me.
Okay. Like, you're talking about harmless superstitions.
Yeah, like the little rituals people do to kind of ward off possible negative repercussions.
Okay, yeah. I knock on wood, right?
Yeah, I find myself feeling very nervous if I make some kind of declarative positive, like, this is going to be great. And then, like, I feel this desperate need to knock on wood. And then I realized, like, a lot of those rituals are very entertaining to me.
Okay. It is the kind of thing I don't think about, but I do that every time I say anything remotely positive.
Well, And when I was trying to kind of research the history of it, there's a lot of kind of conflicting stories as to how these things came about.
Well, tell them all to me.
Which I found interesting. So knock on wood. So there's a few things. A lot of it either goes back to kind of religious origins or just kind of ancient things that may have been religious and may not have been religious.
Okay.
So knock on wood, ancient pagan cultures believe that spirits and gods reside in trees and that knocking may have chased away evil spirits or prevented them from listening when you boasted about something, thereby preventing a reversal of fortune.
Okay. So you're punching the spirits right out them trees.
Or Christians have often linked the practice to the wood of the cross for Christ's crucifixion.
Okay, that's probably...
Or, and this one's my favorite, British folklorist Steve Roud traces the practice to a 19th century children's game called Touchwood.
Sorry. Touchwood?
Tiggy Touchwood, which is a type of tag in which players were immune from being caught whenever they touched a piece of wood.
That seems... Tiggy apocryphal. Touchwood. It's a fun thing to say.
I think it might be my roller derby name.
Tiggy Touchwood's a really, really good roller derby name.
So it sounded kind of like a home base. Like if you're playing tag, like you would go to home base and then
sure.
You couldn't be it.
It was the pagan one, though, that was like explicitly for the exact reason that we still do it to this day.
Yes.
Which makes me think that that's where it is.
That's the one that holds the most weight with me. The knock on wood feels very like I am acknowledging this thing I'm saying is chancy. And so I'm going to knock on this wood, and that's going to address that I know what I'm saying might be foolish. So I like that one.
That's a good one.
Mm-hmm. There's a few other ones I wanted to talk about just because I learned a little bit about them and I didn't realize anything. So the mirror thing, breaking the mirror.
Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm. Ancient Romans believed that souls regenerated every 7 years.
That's news to me.
That your health and your body like regenerates every 7 years, and that a mirror contains fragments of your soul. So if you break the mirror, that's 7 years bad luck until everything regenerates again.
That, are you sure?
That's what I found on the internet.
That's wild.
That's what I found on the internet.
Ancient Romans thought every 7 years you...
Well, have you heard that about like your skin? Like every... I don't know if it's 7 years.
I don't think
years.
It's like 36 hours. Every 36 hours, you're a bunch of new cells.
But like your skin sloughs off and basically the person you are now isn't
sloughs
the person you are.
Off. Jesus, this is visceral. Every 7 years, my soul is regenerated and it lives inside that mirror. So please don't. I think that this whole thing came from back then, mirrors were very expensive.
That's possible.
And so people were like, this, like, if you break my mirror, your soul will be destroyed just to keep people from, you know, horse playing.
Yes. Do you want to hear about the ladder?
Yeah.
Walking under the ladder, this is the one with kind of conflicting source material. So in Christianity, there's the doctrine of the Trinity. And when you lean a ladder against a wall, it forms a triangle.
This can't be it. That's such a wild stretch.
And that like breaking the triangle is like desecrating the Trinity.
That's not true for anything else.
I've also seen it tied to Egypt. The ancient Egyptians obviously placed a lot of value on the pyramid, the triangle, and to break the triangle again, that's a problem.
I don't think it's either of those. I think it's, I think it was some sort of foreman situation was like on top of a ladder and little kids kept running under it. And he's like, that's 50.
That's bad luck.
You're going to go to hell.
There was also, and so there's a lot I don't know about Christianity. Just heads up, guys. Like I don't have a lot of exposure to it.
I got you.
There was a ladder that rested against the crucifix, which became a symbol of wickedness, betrayal, and death.
This is, again, they probably used a ladder to get them
and then
that
ladder
there.
Was just there.
But in like, I don't, but my, you know, me growing up, if I had like a crucifix necklace, it didn't have a little ladder on it.
the ladder charm that you could attach.
Nothing. The ladder is nothing. I'm not like a deep biblical scholar, but mm-hmm. I don't think the ladder is anything.
So you feel comfortable walking under a ladder?
Do I feel comfortable? No, but not because of Jesus. It's just because you shouldn't.
What about opening an umbrella indoors?
That one I feel like is just rude. I feel like it's rude to do that because it's probably wet and you're going to get drippy drips on people.
I saw two explanations. One was some culture placed a lot of value on their very fancy umbrellas. And another one was like umbrellas used to be super dangerous. And so it was a good idea not to open them indoors.
Umbrellas used to be super dangerous?
Because they were very faulty. Like the mechanism was not reliable. And so you could very easily hurt yourself.
Just the top would go just launching off and impale somebody.
I don't know.
Dry.
I don't know. I have two more. One is about the number 13, which is actually relevant because this Friday is Friday the 13th.
Oh, interesting.
So get ready.
This one's religious, right?
Of some sort.
Yes. Okay, yes.
Judas was the 13th guest at the Last Supper.
Wait, that's it?
Yeah, he's just, he's a bad guy and he was number 13.
Okay.
You don't want to be 13.
That's really it? I thought it was different.
Well, there's another one. So there were 12 gods invited to dine at Valhalla. Loki was the god of strife and evil, crashed the party, raising the number to 13. The other gods tried to kick Loki out. Baldur, the favorite, was killed.
So not a great time for...
Yeah, so just 13, not a good idea. Here's the one I think you'll like. This is about your friend the moon.
I love the moon. Mm-hmm.
Greeks knew that the moon and its goddess Luna held the tides in their thrall, and Aristotle considered the human brain to be the moistest organ, particularly susceptible to Luna's pull. So your brain is like the wettest, and since Luna oversees the moon, the moon pulls the tides on a full moon, you have to be really concerned about the impact on your moist organ.
Aristotle, you said? Said
yes.
This
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Aristotle was like
that brain's the gooshiest.
What that brain do though?
It's the gooshiest.
That's
gooshiest.
A gooshy brain you got mm-hmm. there. Gotta be careful the moon doesn't pull it right out of the top mm-hmm. of your skull.
People talk a lot about
I'm Aristotle, the smartest one alive right now, but folks, don't worry, it's gonna get a lot better than me. Mm-hmm. I know you hear me say stuff like the brain's the wettest organ. And so the moon's going to whip it around in your head like a bumper car. And you're going to think, this is the smartest one? Don't worry. It's going to get smarter from here.
Hippocrates apparently also said, one who is seized with terror, fright, and madness during the night is being visited by the goddess of the moon.
Is that better or worse than your wet, wet brain is slip-sliding away?
I love it.
It's fun.
I love it. I think it's fun. I think superstitions by their nature are just like doing things without really understanding why you're doing it, but
yes.
Just being a little terrified that if you don't, there's going to be some kind of negative result. And who doesn't want a little more luck in their life?
Sure.
Right?
It's the original chain letter. I guess a little bit.
I think a little bit.
Can I do my first
yes.
thing? My first thing is murder mystery parties.
Oh, Griffin.
I've only done a couple of these. But they left quite an impression because there's a lot of things about a murder mystery party that is just right up my alley. I guess for one thing, it's a party that you can win, and that's rare.
But doesn't it? Okay, so this is what's been hard for me in my previous experience with murder mystery, which has only been twice here in Austin.
Yes.
Have you done them prior to living here?
No.
Okay. I find that if people don't share the commitment to it, it becomes very frustrating for me.
But I don't know that that has been true for the murder mystery parties that we have attended.
I recall...
Are you about to put our friends on blast?
No. These are people we don't actually know very well. I recall having conversations with people who seemed deceptive to me just because they were approaching it differently than me. And so a lot of times I'd be like, I can't trust that guy. He's a shady character. And then I find out later, he was just kind of drunk.
Yeah. Are you subtweeting me right now?
No. I enjoy you inebriated. It's one of my faves.
I didn't enjoy me inebriated at the first murder mystery party I ever went to. Because I didn't exactly knives out it. I didn't necessarily use my little gray cells.
You did disappear for a while. And then I found out later it was not.
I was out up front doing some heavy breathing.
It did not have to do with your character.
No, a lot of people did think that was a clue, though, which is fun. I like it. It brings out the spirit of competition with your friends in a setting where that's not normally true. And I think that's really fun. A big thing for me is that it is a guaranteed party activity. Sometimes when I, like, before I go to a party, I get anxious about, like, what I'm actually going to be doing at that party. Like, am I going to find a zone where my friends are hanging out, where we can all chill and talk, or, you know, have snacks or what? I would like to know that I'm going to have some sort of nice activity, because I've been to parties where even I might know some people there, and I still feel unmoored in a way of just like, I don't have a headquarters at this
party.
You
need a job, kind of.
I'm not a job. That makes it sound like I don't know how to party. I do. I'm a fucking monster.
Yeah, okay.
But I do like knowing that, like, I'm going to have a comfortable area there. Mm-hmm. And knowing that there's going to be a murder mystery to solve, like, that fixes that for me. Solving mysteries is also, like, fun as hell and not something that you usually get to do.
True.
Unless you have a mystery solving job, in which case you're probably not going to be invited to parties like these. Role playing is fun to do. Also, it's fun to see your friends do role playing, especially if they're the types of friends who, like, you don't, like, play D&D with or anything like that.
Did you feel like either time you were close to and or solved the mystery?
No, God, no.
And that wasn't frustrating to you?
I guess a little bit. I think I more enjoyed being a player on the stage. I enjoyed being, oh, me, Dr. Hatfield, have I seen the vial of the shrinking potion? It's been a long time since we did one of these.
As somebody who likes to win, I'm not saying that you're like a super competitive nightmare, but like, you're somebody that likes to figure something out and do it well. It wasn't frustrating to you to not to crack it?
No, because like you mentioned, like, it is actually, there are a lot of ways that these things can break bad.
Yeah.
You could have one person there who is just being shifty for no reason.
Yeah.
And then that can just like throw off the whole thing. Because it's tough to ask a bunch of people to come into your house and pretend to be other people, and also here's clues and don't spill the beans and play your part, and there's going to be people who aren't equipped for that. Yeah. I am, for whatever reason, not especially competitive when it comes to this specific and only this thing.
Only this.
I think I might like LARPing. Like, if we could get all of our friends to go out to the park and just LARP a little bit.
Oh, man.
Just a little LARP around. Maybe for, like, my 40th birthday party. Like, a big one that I can be like, you all fucking owe me. Take this, you know, foam sword.
What do you think I'm missing, right? Like, why do you think that it's not a thing I'm comfortable with? Because I'm open to it, but it also makes me very uncomfortable. Yeah. And I'd like to know kind of what hurdle I need to overcome.
What if we could, like, murder in small town exit? Or, to use a reference that more than six people are going to get, what if we could, like, Truman Show it, where you're the only person trying to solve the murder and everybody else is actors?
That might be fun.
Okay.
That might be fun, unless it became this thing where it was like very embarrassing that I hadn't figured it out. It's like, you know, when you're watching somebody play charades,
yeah,
and like everybody else has figured out what they're doing and the one person that's guessing has no idea.
Yeah, I mean, that would be pretty savage. But you would just have to not do it. It would add extra pressure for you to crack it.
And that's always fun.
That's always fun. My last thing, I like that they have a built-in conclusion. So if you're hosting the party, you can be like, well, get out. That's it. Murder's solved.
We've been to a couple of them. I think they were both kind of purchased off the internet as little packages.
Right.
If I remember correctly, there were like, you said how many people were in your party and they would give you the right number of characters for that many people.
Yeah. This was a, you know, there were various variations on different parlor games like in the early 19th century that were kind of this. Mafia basically came out of this, the game that Werewolf was sort of originated from. But they had these very, very brief, like, year-long swings, like, in the 80s and 90s, where they would sell them in box sets called How to Host, And they would be like little box sets. It's like the thing that they played in that one episode of The Office. Like, it was basically that. But then once the internet sort of became a thing that everybody had everywhere all the time, distributing those became obviously a much easier prospect. So
I just realized the second time I did this, you weren't in town. And maybe that's why I didn't enjoy it as much. The first time we got to be this like sweater vest couple, and we both wore turtlenecks and sweater vests. And I can't remember. It was a cruise ship.
Yeah.
But then the second one, it was like a high school reunion theme. And I was the girl that went to Harvard and wanted everybody to know she went to Harvard.
Did that hurt?
Well, so I like went to the trouble of buying a Harvard sweatshirt. But I don't think people really got that was my character. I think they thought I was just kind of a dick.
Oh, no. Well, I'm sorry to abandon you like that. I was out solving real murders.
Real murders, yeah.
Sorry, everybody. I guess Rachel wanted them to get away with it. But I don't want to talk anymore because my throat hurts. Can I steal you away?
Yes, please. Can I read you our first personal message? Mm. This is for Squawks. It is from your best gal. To my dearest Squawks, you are made of light and love. The life we've built with Peepums and Pie Wacket reminds me every day how lucky I am to know your patience and kindness. I only wish I could tell the whole world how truly spectacular you are. For now, I'll start with letting the wonderful listeners know I've done it. I've found the best boy.
Sorry, Derek. I'm talking to Derek, who's standing in the room.
Oh, who thinks he's the best boy?
You're finished.
Yeah, sorry.
You're nothing now, Derek.
It's Squawks.
It's Squawks now, Derek. Hold on. Derek left. I feel terrible. Didn't deserve this.
Derek had to know that Squawks was nipping.
Biting his ankles.
Nipping at those heels.
Here is another message. This one's for Leah, and it's from Alex, who says, to my wonderful sister Leah, I know I won't be able to afford a good wedding gift for you and Brand Dog because I'm just your poor, dumb baby sister. So I hope this dose of McElroy's will do. Wishing you a lifetime of love like Rachel and Griffin have for hot dogs and each other. Lila's, because you're my sister, Alex.
It almost sounded like you said Griffin there.
Did I say Griffin?
It sounded like you were saying Griffin a little bit.
I for sure said Lila's.
Yes, which
that
I
of course stands for love.
You like a SpongeBob?
Exactly.
I've got a message for you.
Hi, it's me, April Wolfe, the host of Switchblade Sisters and co-writer of the new horror film, Black Christmas.
And I'm Katie Walsh, film critic and occasional host of Switchblade Sisters.
We're here to announce that for one episode, we will be doing something a little different. Much like Jeff Goldblum in David Cronenberg's The Fly, I will be going through a truly disturbing transformation.
April will transform from the interviewer into the interviewee. I will be asking her all about her new film, Black Christmas, her writing process, and ongoing existential dread.
But I will also be discussing John Carpenter's perfect masterpiece, Prince of Darkness.
You guys seen any movies you like?
So tune in to Switchblade Sisters for a one-of-a-kind episode with April Wolfe and me, Katie Walsh.
See you then.
Only the corrupt I listen to now.
Can I tell you my second thing?
Yes.
My second thing is Moon Towers.
These are the is there a murder history to these?
Maybe.
Okay.
But not confirmed.
Okay. So we pretend maybe that it's not.
Okay.
We should talk about it because I can't just say something like that and we don't return to it.
We will talk about it.
Cool, cool, cool.
Wasn't planning on spending a lot of time on it.
All right, all right, all right.
It's a great way to start this segment though.
Yeah. I'll just do as many days
when I said superstitions, you didn't jump to murder, but you could have.
Right, maybe. I guess.
But with Moon Towers, they're only in Austin. They don't exist anywhere else.
Nowhere. Then maybe you should explain what they are.
Okay. Moon Towers. So in 1894, Austin purchased 31 used moonlight towers from Detroit. The whole idea behind moon towers was that cities all over the United States were starting to produce outdoor lighting. And with a moon tower, you could get a significant amount of light, and it was more in that way cost effective than getting a bunch of different lampposts.
It's basically a street light if a street light wasn't a fucking baby about it.
Yeah, it's like a water tower. I mean, the reason they're called moon towers is that they shoot like 15 feet up in the sky, and they are able to shoot light over a much larger amount of space. Let me find. Why do I have that? Okay. Okay, they're much taller than 15 feet.
Just gonna say, that's not very tall, babe.
So moon towers are 165 feet tall.
That's way bigger. That's 11 times bigger.
I remember that there was a 1 and a 5 in there. Forgot about the 6 in the middle.
Holy shit.
165 feet tall, and they illuminate a 1,500-foot radius.
They're bright as hell.
Yeah, they're super bright. Austin had 31 when they bought them from Detroit.
Was Detroit using them at that point, or were they just making them?
They were making them.
Okay.
But they bought them used from Detroit.
Okay.
In this time period, Austin's population was only around 18,000 people. They first went up in the Hyde Park neighborhood, which was Austin's first suburb. Now there's only about 15 in existence in Austin, so about half that many. Cities all over the United States were starting to explore these options. The hilly terrain of Austin made it a little difficult to do the street lamps.
Instead they used 165 foot tall Uber street lamps.
They were connected to electric generators at the Austin Dam. And in 1920s, their original carbon arc lamps were super bright but time consuming to maintain. So there was a big kind of overhaul of them in the 90s where they dismantled every tower and restored them to make them last, like, you know, 50 more years. The way you may know about them, because again, they don't exist anywhere outside of Austin, is from Dazed and Confused.
Right.
In 1993, there was a party at the Moon Tower in Dazed and Confused, and this was actually one that they artificially created for the movie.
Really? I didn't know that.
Yeah, because moon towers aren't designed to be climbed.
Right.
They're not like water towers in that way, and so they had to construct one that was climbable for the film.
Okay.
Yeah.
You just sounded so Texas, by the way, when you said the word water towers. It was like you were on some for real Tammy Taylor shit, and I've never been more turned on in my life.
Maybe the Tammy Taylor sized glass of wine that I've had this evening.
Yes.
Here's where the murders come in. So around that time period, there had been some serial killings. And so there was a suggestion that maybe the Moon Tower movement was motivated by a desire to kind of light up these neighborhoods to make them safer.
Yeah.
But obviously there's nothing written down anywhere of like, and we shall erect these towers to address the murder issue. Like it's not documented. Yeah. So they can't say for sure.
Right. And serial killers are also famously very skittish. So you turn a light on one of them, like a cockroach, they just zip right away.
It did say, actually, when I was reading about it, that after these were installed, the murders did cease. So
what were they murdering to get more streetlights so that their kids could play hockey in the street at night? Was it just a very ill-advised protest? What's
Who's
going
to say?
On?
Who's okay. to say? There's a little documentary online. It's called The Last of the Moonlight Towers. It's like 50 minutes long. It's available for rent on Vimeo. It seems very cute. You can watch the trailer for free. Talking about the different reasons for the creation of the Moon Tower. Mm. But it's just a really beautiful thing. And they're like, the way they're set up in Austin, they're kind of total surprises. Like if you're walking around Hyde Park, for example, you'll just be walking on the street and you'll just kind of run into one. They're all, as of 1970, recognized as Texas landmarks. And they are listed in the National Register of Historic Places.
Huh.
Of only 6 are in their original locations. And the one in Zilker Park that makes the Zilker Park Christmas tree is still there.
Oh, that's right.
So the big Christmas tree they string all the lights to that they claim is the world's largest Christmas tree is actually attached to a moon tower.
That's neat. Mm-hmm. I had no idea. They're so neat. They're so pretty. If you've never been to Austin and ever seen them, like they are, for a city that is as sort of hippy dippy as Austin is, to have these monolithic, like industrial pieces of like electronics all over is like really kind of, I mean, they're not, I don't know, it's not like brutalist or anything like that, but they do stick out, I feel like, in a really neat way.
And the thing about Austin that was a little troublesome to me when I moved here is I felt like it was a city that was abandoning its history. You know, like everything was brand new. There were all these new high rises. It seemed like the city was constantly under construction. And it wasn't until I spent some time in Hyde Park that I thought, like, oh, there are pockets of Austin that are really connected to the history. And what's great about Moon Towers is, yeah, I mean, they've been around for over 100 years. Yeah. It's like a real reminder
of those grisly murders. Yeah, Rachel never letting people move on. Like, it's they've grieved already. Let's drop it, you know? I want to do my second thing.
Please.
I'm going to be so brief with it. I'm going to let the singing do the talking for me for the most part.
Oh, okay.
Because I'm going to talk about key changes. Key changes are the most powerful things that you can do in a song, scientifically speaking. It's formally known as modulation. I mean, a key change is what it says on the tin. You don't have to be, I think, especially well-versed in music to know what a key change is. It's where you take the key of a song and you make it different from what it was where it started. A lot of the times following certain sort of harmonic rules. And I just really love them. I feel like they were the original sort of dubstep drop before we had dubstep drops.
Good point.
And that goes all the way back to like classical music. There are certain like forms of classical music where key changes play like a defining part in that form. I learned about the sonata form is a formal piece of classical, a formal type of classical music where there are three movements and a key change separates.
I know about the Moonlight one.
The Moonlight Sonata, yes, yeah. Famously. Yeah, because I've talked about it on the show, where it pops off. I think it's the second movement that's like, that kicks ass, man. But yeah, to establish the kind of raw power that I'm talking about, I'm going to start by discussing sort of the most influential hit song that really revived this particular phenomenon. It wasn't until this song came out that I think musical artists sort of realized what they were capable of doing with their craft. And the song that I am talking about is, of course, Billy Ocean's Get Out of My Dreams and Into My Car. You didn't just listen to it, but
I did.
Do you remember the incredible? A lot of people like to talk about Coming in the Air Tonight as having like the best drop of a song from that era. I would argue that the key change in Get Out of My Dreams, Get Into My Car is like there's so much pretense to it. They like stop the music and there's like duh, duh, get out of my. There's like a pregnant pause there that I could just take a nap in. But of course, you know, that's not the only song to really benefit of a key change. I mean, it hits hard and it hits good. But what I like about key changes is that they can make good songs great, but they can make terrible songs kind of good. And to illustrate that point, I'd like to play Mr. Biggs To Be With You.
Oh, Griffin, this is perfect. Come on over, let me be the one to show you. I'm the one who
Mr. Biggs To Be With You is not a good song, traditionally speaking, by any metric that you could measure it by.
I used to love it, though, as a youth.
Sure. Yeah, I would roller skate to this one, absolutely. What really fascinates me, this song, I think, only stands the test of time because of the key change that you get in the middle of it and because of how much stink they put sort of on it. What I love about the key change in To Be With You is that it only lasts for one like repetition of the chorus and then they drop back down to the original tonic. You fucking cowards. Like I can't think of too many other songs where they do that, where they're like, oh, brace your asses, I'm the one who, but then they're like, no guys, it's almost like they went, it's too high, drop it back down. Of course, this is not the only song that has more than one key change. It's to sort of leave us off, and really the song I was thinking about when we started doing this segment, the song that everybody's probably wanting me to talk about, what's the song that you think of as having most key changes in it? Because I feel like this answer is pretty set in stone.
Oh, I'm so bad with this stuff, Griffin.
Love on Top.
Oh, God, yeah.
Love on Top is...
Oh, that's so good.
Exquisite. It's a good song, and just, it's a good song. It's a good, good song. And if she had had no key changes in it and just had that like fun music video, it would have been like, this is a good song. But instead, Beyonce was like, let's do a key change. And then another one, and then another one, and then a fourth motherfucking key change. Because I'm Beyonce, and I just have these key changes lying around.
I mean, it's like Mariah Carey, right? Like people, there are people that realize they can do it. And then it's like, how far can I go? You know?
Probably, I think Beyonce probably could have done about four or five more. It's just that the song, they ran out of tape on that one.
It's like, hey, Beyonce, we got to get home by 8. It's 7:58.
You've done 64 key changes.
You've got to stop.
You found a new octave. We're all very tired. We're very impressed. We're very tired. Key changes, they're powerful. Use them responsibly.
Are you going to play some Love on Top?
I already did.
Oh, good.
I got some submissions from our friends at home.
Please.
Kaylee says, my wonderful thing this week is the Rubik's Cube. I finally learned how to solve one this week, and the absolute joy and adrenaline I felt when I saw all the sides solved was amazing.
Have you prioritized this as a thing you want to learn how to do?
Never in my life.
Me neither. I can't care about it. I understand why people do. There's no part of me that wants to know how.
Justin's deep into it. Travis is just now getting into it. I love puzzles and games and all that shit. Mm-hmm. The two things I don't fuck with is slide puzzles and Rubik's Cube, which is basically 6 slide puzzles.
I know that there is a way to do it. I understand that it takes some skill and some practice. And like anything that takes skill and practice, it can be very impressive. It
makes me tired.
Yes. It's like if I dropped 100 pencils on the ground and I had to pick each one up one at a time.
And also you could mess up very badly how you pick. Yes. Emily says, well, hi. Something I love is small town weirdness. I'm from a very small community that's obsessed with squirrels. I mean, there's a giant squirrel statue in the civic circle, enough squirrel bridges to be in Ripley's Believe It or Not. And in 2013, the Spin Doctors performed at the annual Squirrel Fest.
Wait, what's a squirrel bridge?
Is this a bridge between like buildings so that squirrels can run?
Oh, man.
Across them?
That is delightful.
I like that. I just made that up, but that might be what it is. I like that.
I mean, when I think of Huntington small town weirdness, I just think of the endless food festivals.
The many food festivals that we do. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there was the time that our mayor got abducted.
I don't think I know about
by
that.
By aliens. Jean Dean, her name was. Mayor Jean Dean.
Tell me more.
Patron of the arts. Big booster for the local community theater productions. Got sucked up into it up in a spaceship once. Never saw her again. It made the news.
Huh.
She came back bristling with tentacles,
mm-hmm.
covered in slime.
Are there Jean Dean bridges between buildings now so that she can skitter between?
There are no more buildings. She smashed them all up under her huge gooey feet.
It is weird that I haven't heard
it's
about
weird
this.
Didn't hear about this the time our mayor got sucked up and turned into a big alien Godzilla.
Jean Dean, huh?
She fucked it all up. She exploded it, the whole uh-huh. town. And we've been rebuilding ever since.
Huh.
But, you know, it's home. thanks to Bowen and Augustus for these for our theme song, Money Won't Pay. You can find a link to that in the episode description. Tell me everything you know about Maximum Fun.
So here's the thing about MaximumFun.org. They are a site that hosts just dozens of incredible podcasts.
Hundreds.
That are funny, that are topical, that can be narrative, that can touch your heart and your soul and your funny bone. And I would recommend you check it out.
It'll grab you right by the funny bone, folks. Mm-hmm. Both of them.
Mm-hmm.
You got two, you're only going to need one. Two would be redundant. I don't feel good.
Can I tell you a funny story about a mayor that I'm gonna make up right now?
It would be a little derivative,
but this mayor
okay
was a ghost.
Are you making fun of my mayor?
And then we created a whole throne for the ghost mayor. And the throne was haunted. And so the Ghostmaer was scared to go on the throne and nobody would go on the throne. And then that throne became a White Castle.
I don't know that that makes sense. My alien one had a beginning, a middle, and an end. It had a whole dramatic arc and also was the truth. And I think yours was a freaking lie.
Burger
Why
King?
Would the ghost be afraid of a haunted chair?
Would you believe Burger King?
Yes.
Okay, it was a Burger King.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture. Artist owned.
Listener supported.
Hey, if you like your podcast to be focused and well-researched and your podcast host to be uncharismatic, unhorny strangers who have no interest in horses, then this is not the podcast for you.
Again, what's your deal? I'm Emily.
I'm Lisa.
Our show's called Baby Geniuses.
And its hosts are horny adult idiots. We discover weird Wikipedia pages every episode.
We discuss institutional misogyny.
We ask each other the dumbest questions, and our listeners won't stop sending us pictures of their butts.
We haven't asked them to stop, but they also aren't stopping.
Join us on Baby Geniuses
every other week on MaximumFun.org.